welcome. You have tuned in to WWGH 107.1 FM Radio. My name is Linda Sims, and the name of my program is called A Voice of a People. We stream live on the web, www.wwgh1071.com. You can download free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. You can call 740-383-9944 if you would like to touch bases with myself or my guest today. Let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of the People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there is 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. They have an ongoing announcement. Free produce market every second Saturday of every month at Logos Christian Ministries, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. The time on the second Saturday of every month is from 12 p.m. until 2 p.m. Fresh food free. Individuals need no appointment. Just show up and provide your name and number of people in your family. So if you missed last Saturday, you'll have to wait until the second Saturday of April. Boy, time is going really fast, isn't it? Whew, I think so. I wish spring would come a little faster. Snow yesterday, can you believe that? Oh, wow, I couldn't believe that. We have also Inspect Ohio as a supporter, LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 25 years of experience working for you out of LaRue, Ohio, and their telephone number is 740-262-0939. I have a thought for you today. Big and Generous Hearts. That's the title. The qualities of love, mercy, and generosity are known as having a big heart. To have a big heart means to feel everyone belonging to you. A big heart flourishes with success in body, in mind, in wealth, and in relationships. Those who have small hearts have to work hard and experience less success. Those with big and generous hearts are loved by all. Do you know anybody like that? I think I do. Do you need your heart to grow a little bigger like I do? Yes, let's work on that. Now I'm turning my attention to my guest for today, Jamila Tucker. Hi, Jamila.
Hi.
Pull the mic closer to you.
Absolutely.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Linda. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. So glad to see you.
I'm glad to see you as well. And, you know, the weather has been a bit bipolar. But I'm going to tell you, to see the snow this morning, you know, on the tree caps as I was driving up 71, I said, you know, it actually is really pretty. You know, it just reminds you that it's a great thing about being in the Midwest. If you don't like the weather, wait. It's changing.
I know. Yeah. That's what a lot of people say. We have all seasons here.
We do.
We get to change our clothes, our boots, our shoes, mm-hmm. our footwear, our headwear, you know. Mm-hmm. Hey, we got the best of all seasons right here.
We do. And our attitudes change depending on the seasons.
Doesn't
I think we get an appreciation. I think we also get a time to slow down and reflect, and we get it all, you know. And I think if it weren't that way, then, you know, sometimes our attitudes just might stay that way as well. So it's nice.
Right.
I appreciate being a Midwesterner.
And we'd be a bore.
We
would be a bore. And our hearts would not be big and generous.
This is true.
Well, I need you to tell our listening audience your title.
Sure. I am Jamila Tucker. I'm the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, or Division of Arts and Sciences, at Marion Technical College here in Marion, Ohio.
Okay, great. So how long have you been there?
Just over 3 months. So I started December 7th after being with the State of Ohio Department of Higher Education for 6 years, and prior to that, University of Toledo and also Northwest State Community College. So I've just been there. I'm dipping my toes in, so it's going on the fourth month, but really enjoying it.
Well,
so
great.
Newly minted.
All right, that's awesome. How do you like our city?
I love Marion. I love the Midwest. I am a Midwest born and bred, from Toledo, Ohio. So I've seen Ohio grow and flourish, and also slow down and reinvent itself.
Yes.
I think cities like Marion, more than just being bedroom communities to sort of Columbus, Ohio, have a unique history in terms of industrialization, in terms of industry. And I think this is a critical point for cities all around the United States who find themselves in a position of having very talented workforces, but also needing to reskill and retool those workforces to make sure that new jobs and new innovations are coming into the region. And so I see cities like Marion across Ohio needing strong community colleges to serve that purpose, needing to be they're great places for families already, right? Great places for businesses already.
Yes.
It's just that maybe additional factor of, you know, attracting business to the area and sustaining businesses that are already in the area. And Marion has that pull. And its co-location to Columbus and to Central Ohio shouldn't be missed also. It's a livable city. I mean, you look at sometimes what's happening in our larger cities and our urban centers, and it's very difficult for people to live in a sustainable way because of the price of housing.
Yes.
Go 45 minutes away, 30 minutes away, and you find more affordable housing in communities like Marion, Ohio. So I think there's that tie to Central Ohio. There's also a good and strong workforce here. People here are creative, and it's a city that definitely people want to progress. People want to see their children progress.
Yes.
You've got great schools here. Some of the partnerships between Marion Schools and Marion Technical Ohio, Marion Technical College are revered around the state. I mean, I learned about those even before coming to Marion Technical College. So I think there's a lot of promise here. A lot of promise.
I think so too. The college especially has always been a plus, and they're doing all they can for housing for students there, and it's and it has helped us to define what type of community we want to be, you
That's
know
right.
And then we have President Harding, who lived here, and his monument is here, and so it's a college town and also a historical town, you know, with our president living
absolutely
here. And they're doing the Harding museum. That's up and, well, not up and running, but at least they're digging. They're getting ready for that, you know. And I was born and raised here.
Awesome.
I've been here mostly all my life. I've gone away and moved back, so, and here I am. So,
and what drew you back to Marion?
I don't know. I felt that the Lord sent me back here for some reason. And like you say, it's more affordable.
It is. It is. Affordability for housing is going to, I think, be a key issue as we continue to move. The pricing of housing, people are literally being priced out. Two income families are being priced out of homes.
Right.
You know, that are located within proximity of their work.
Right.
You know, it's a, that's a danger of any city that grows really fast.
That's true. That is so true. So true. So, what is it that you like best about OSUM since you've been here?
Marion Technical?
Yes.
About Marion, what do I like best?
So you're Ohio State University or OSUM?
I am Marion Technical College. And okay. So Marion Technical College is one of a few situations in Ohio where we have campuses that are co-located that share some resources but maintain separate identities in terms of accreditation of centralized accreditors. So I'm on the Marion Technical side, but we share a great and beautiful campus with Ohio State University, Marion. What do I like best about Marion Technical College? I would definitely say the people.
Okay.
I became familiar with many of the people at Marion Technical College with my through my work at the state. And one of the things that I heard that I saw actionable, it wasn't just words, is Dr. McCall had mentioned his relationship with Marion Harding High School.
Okay.
And the desire to not just touch the student, but touch the family tree. So as you look at educating the next therapist, you know, OT therapist, that might be a student who's aspiring to that major as a sophomore in high school, that we're also addressing and looking at mom and dad might want to do something different or might be looking at education as well. And so his idea was, you know, I want to reach the family tree. I want to change lives and family trees.
That's an excellent idea.
I think it's an excellent idea. And I saw that happening here,
yes.
Not just lip service. I think there's programming at Marion Technical College that touches the high school students through our GPS and our College Credit Plus program. Our average age student is 27, so we're definitely teaching and touching those that are in their sort of middle life.
Right. I didn't even have thought that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Average
so there's a span. Average age of our student is 27, and we serve three populations. So we serve our high school students, again, through CCP and GPS, as well as our traditional age students that are the age of 27, but we're also in both correctional institutes as well, teaching.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I may have known that, but it's been a while since I had anyone from there, so.
Yeah. So it's a community mission, and I think that's the place of education.
Has to be.
Sure.
Well, the guys and I were talking before the show started, and we were talking about the incarceration and you know, the how popular it seems and how easy it is to just throw people behind bars. Mm-hmm. And what are they doing to help them while they are behind bars, you know, to help them come out here and sustain this type of living? Because once you're locked up for so long, it's hard to come back
reacclimate,
out here and stand,
sure.
you know, and be strong, you know, because there's so many obstacles out here and you're not used to them after being in there for so long. So that's great that the college is there.
Yeah, people don't wake up one day and say, hey, I think it's a great day to go to prison.
It takes
work to get to that space. And in many cases, you know, the conditions of poverty and also conditions of lack of role models and frustrations, all of these things lead there, and it's total and complete. It's not just one thing that happens that typically leads a person to prison. It's typically been a buildup of habits that are happening. Education is the training of the mind and the soul. Mm-hmm. You know, our early educators thought, you know, Socrates and others thought of education as the training of the soul. Mm-hmm. And so as you look at what can happen in that space of education, it provides an opportunity for people to change not just the way that they think about concepts and knowledge and formalized knowledge,
sure.
but the way they relate as citizens. And how to think through complex problems in a different way, how to see things from a different angle. Those are the skills that you're going to need to truly recidivate in society after coming out of incarceration. And those skills can be learned through an education.
Right.
So I think it's the greatest service. Unfortunately, it is not always the best funded option. And it is always it's not always available to every inmate, of course. But I think there is a lot of promise, and you have institutions like Lumina Foundation doing national studies and looking at what's happening in the space of education inside of correctional institutes, and finding that the more that those classrooms become inclusive of not just the individuals inside of the correctional institute, but those outside, there are actually models where people are piloting both prison and non-prison populations in the same class and having success in changing views, not just on the side of the person who's incarcerated,
right,
but the person who's not incarcerated, having an understanding and an empathy that there is still a human behind
right.
that space.
That's true.
And that there are conditions that led to that, some of which were in the individual's control in some cases, and some of which were not out. And I believe the more that we can get to a place in our society where we talk across our differences and our
right.
different understandings, the better off we are. That actually is some of the conversation that's not happening at a national level right now. And that is where that's where we'll continue to struggle as a nation, quite frankly. So it's a good thing to be there in the Correctional Institute.
Because, you know, I think that there could be a more effective way to defer youth that's going the wrong way at early, because they don't just, like you say, all of a sudden say, I'm going to prison. They work themselves up to that by mm-hmm. already having bad habits, don't want to listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can warn people all the time, but you can't make them do anything. From your perspective, what more could we do with the younger people as far as education and helping to train their minds, even though we know they're already think that their mind is set to going the wrong way and mm-hmm. just doing what their buddies do or, you know, what they see on TV, you know.
Sure.
It's a lot.
I think our institutions bear a lot of responsibility for the rates of incarceration. And I'm talking about our formalized institutions, mm-hmm. not just our criminal justice system, but our education system as well. We know through research, very well documented research, that there is a pipeline from the classroom to the prison. We start this very young by giving infractions in kindergarten. We have kindergartners in the United States that can be expelled for the entire year.
Oh, my.
It's really hard to understand how that happens at 5 years old, but we have it at rates higher than most other developed nations and countries.
Really?
Absolutely. And so if you look at the work of some like Michelle Alexander and others who are working and looking at mass incarceration in mm-hmm. the United States, there's some truth to our systems having places of fracture and brokenness that lead students to the criminal justice system. And so one of those places can be formalized education in the way that we give infractions, even in the high school setting, the elementary setting, and unfortunately, even in the kindergarten and pre-kindergarten setting. And so when you start to look at that, those infractions and what's happening there, there are all of these fractures in places where we can save students, but we're failing to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I am a firm believer that school should be about learning. There are behavioral components, but an overemphasis on the behavioral components mm-hmm. versus the cognitive components of the education system is a misplace.
Right.
I also believe we've found and have studies that have looked at simply things like feeding students food.
Right.
Nourishment can actually curb the number of infractions and reports that happen in the prison, that happen to the principal's office. So when we look at cognitive and non-cognitive students abilities in students, we have to look at both, and we have to look at where those coalesce and reinvent our systems
mm-hmm.
in radical ways to support today's learner. We are in a different situation than we were in past generations, where we
yes.
had more supports in terms of neighborhoods. Neighborhoods look very different nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know your neighbor in the same way. You have parents just to be able, we talked about affordable housing, just to be
right.
able to afford housing, both parents have to be out of the home.
True.
So you have latchkey situations. You have parents that can't take off of work to listen to a parent-teacher conference. Well, how can I connect with your student, you know, and how can I connect with your daughter or your son if you don't have the allowance to take off work?
Right.
Structurally, we have to start looking at the system as a whole. If there were one answer, I think you and I would probably be rich and sitting back somewhere. I don't think it's one answer that we're looking for to curb some of what's happening, but certainly one place where I feel we have value is that each of us has a responsibility.
Yes, we do.
We have a responsibility to read to our children at night, and if we don't have children at night, maybe we need to go to a local library and see if we can actually read for the library.
That's true.
There's a lot of spaces for us to change on a personal level. In terms of systems, we have to look at policies that are at detriment to student.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we look at what the student is doing wrong, and we don't look at what the institution is doing. Mm-hmm. At Marion Tech, we pride ourselves on being a student-ready college. And so that is our initiative where we are looking at the way our policies promote success. We are an open access institution. We get any student that comes to our door. Our mission is to educate you. How do we provide wraparounds to make sure that all of your needs are met and that we're ready for you with the complexities of what comes into the institution?
Right.
Just that vantage point is going to be something that if we adopted that holistically through K through 20 education or P through 20 education, if we just took that philosophy, I think we'd be in a much better place in education.
Right. And you know, when you, I've heard parents say, well, I send my children to school. Isn't it the school's responsibility to do what I'm not doing, you know? And do you think that's fair or injustice to the school system that it seems like you're babysitters and you're doing different things, you know, that parents may not be doing, right?
Sure.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I definitely think that there's co-ownership. I look at my own son. He spends, in some cases, more time with his teachers than he does with me. That doesn't absolve me of responsibility.
Right.
But it makes us partners in a very real way. And so I'm blessed to have a job and to have the flexibility and the support where I can go to his school and inquire, and I can build relationships with his teacher. I have that time, you know, I can, you know, go to the classroom and be a room mom for a day. I have that flexibility. Not everyone has that flexibility.
That's true.
So I think in as many ways as parents can look at the educators as partners and as teachers can also look at the parents as partners with a little bit more grace on both sides, I think the better off the situation becomes for the student.
Because when we think about college, they more or less have made up their minds, I'm going to have a career. I'm going to get an education. I'm going to have a career. And this is more or less trying to get them there. You know,
absolutely.
The young people, your kindergartners. And it is like my spirit just cringed when you said a kindergartner can possibly be kicked out of school for the entire year.
Oh, yes. We expel kindergartners in the United States. Yes. It happens.
No other option, I guess, for them, huh? They're just behavior problems?
There are other options. Of course there are other options.
Right.
But I think, you know, systemically, you know, you just never know what's going on in those situations. I think each case is obviously individual. As an aggregate, as we look at the numbers of expulsions, we know that there's correlations between race and poverty in the number of infractions that a student gets, and also districts that heavily give more infractions than not. The state of Ohio has been looking at that problem systemically, and there have been a number of policy metrics and measures to try to curb that, and with some of those having a good deal of success. And so I think it's, again, continuing to look at those policies, continuing to look at what works and elevate that to a best practice and make sure that you make it systemic. And certainly in the early years and in early learning, what happens in that, you think about kindergarten readiness, we also don't have universal pre-K in Ohio. And so when you look at that and you look at counties that have moved towards trying to implement that, like Hamilton County, one of the things that they looked at were the metrics of what's happening and what's the cost of not having that happen. And so you have kindergartners who are not ready. You have early learning problems that have not been diagnosed for the first five critical years of that development. We know that if students don't have adequate nutrition, children don't have adequate nutrition in their first 5 years, if they don't have adequate stimulation, those students who start behind stay behind. Mm-hmm. We can look at whole neighborhoods with predictive modeling and see where that's going to happen.
Right.
And so how do you make sure that the resources then match that? And so, you know, part of what happens that we could even expel a kindergartner is making sure that kindergartners are ready.
Yes.
And making sure that we do things in early, we put an emphasis on early family education and the first five critical years, because they are just that.
Yes.
And that includes maternal health, that includes wellness, that includes food, that includes housing security. You have some families and children who are not, they're very experienced movers, six and seven times. So think about our own development and what that would mean to move six or seven times before you're five. You know, and the and the numbers of places of risk that that introduces the child to as well, as they're around people who are unfamiliar to them, as they're around different people with different behaviors and attitudes. And so as you look at that, there's a lot of places where there's some failure. I'd love to see more emphasis in the birth to five arena in terms of support for young families.
And that's so true, and it's critical because I know you may have heard that they're giving school systems, and not just Marion, but I think basically the state of Ohio, and they're saying that they're giving our schools an F as a grade.
Yeah.
That they're not really, the students are not comprehending, they can't pass these tests, they're just not fit for today's educational system. And I really want to know what other people think about that, because that doesn't sound too good to me, you know. Because I know when I was growing up, my mother insisted. She had a stick about this long, okay? It was like a pointer, like a teacher would use. And it was just as solid as one of those. And she had, like, this board. She had the big old cardboards with the ABCs on there. And she'd take you over for a few times. But she had short patience. Because at a certain time she felt like you should know that, and there was a crack on the head, you know, and you got it a whole lot faster. Okay, you had to know how to tie your shoes. I see 10-year-olds don't know how to tie their shoes. You know, we had to know everybody's name in the house and spell it. You know how old they were, and know your own name, know your phone number, know your address. And today's, you can find many second, third grade, don't even know their phone numbers.
Sure.
How to get a hold of their parents or can't tie their shoes. You know, and they're just, I don't know. And you wonder, well, what went wrong? Because they don't have the advantage.
And I find a little, a slightly different variation of that. I find that there are, I find that a lot of, and I'm always very careful as an educator to look at various forms of knowledge that people acquire as they come into the classroom space. And when I was teaching, I was always very careful of that, to ask students about their past and to go from a strengths-based mindset with students. What are you good at? What do you excel at? Quite frankly, I am a horrible, and when it comes to print, I am not the mechanics of writing. My concepts are strong. I excel in theory like nobody's business. Methods, I can set up a great study methodologically. Mechanics, is that there or there? You know, T-H-E-R-E or T-H-I-R-E? Let me get spell check for that. But I think had not an instructor looked at my strengths and elevated those first, it would have been harder for me to be engaged. And so as I look at students, specifically students who come from situations of poverty, and students who may not have as much formalized knowledge, as we might say, at an institution, many of these students have skills that we would applaud. They're excellent at navigation. I have seen students in situations of poverty who know their budget and their parents' budget down to the T and to the I. They know what they can and cannot spend. Well, you know, well, my spoiled little four-year-old has actually no concept of no and what a budget would be. And so as I look at a strength for that student versus my son, there's a strength there. There's also often I've seen students in situations of poverty have multiple siblings for whom they're responsible for. So while they may not know their ABCs, their ethic and caring and compassion and relationship and getting what is need to keep those other kids solvent and whole far exceeds anything that I would have probably known as a child. And so if we can work from those spaces and see how to take that relationship to the care that they have for their siblings into what they're interested in. I see you have caring. Here are some careers where that actually is exploited. How do we get you interested in that? Maybe the first thing is you write about what you do in your day as an instructor. I don't think it was until my college experience that anyone ever asked me to write about me. And what a shame. And so I think that there are spaces. I don't like to look at students at what they can't do. I prefer to look at what they can do and who they want to be. With my advisees, if any advisee who's ever known me, there's one thing that I want to do. I want you to draw your condition now. What does life look like for you now? And I want you to draw what you want life to look like for you. And the only difference between you and anybody else who's ever navigated that space is a plan. Let's work on the plan. That's the only difference. So, you know,
plan and work your plan.
Work your plan. If you, but the problem is, if I only ate macaroni and cheese every day, I only had a pot, water, Kraft macaroni and cheese, knew how to boil the water, knew how to put the noodles in, knew how to squeeze out the sauce. Of course, I'm talking about cheater macaroni and cheese. Please don't anyone call my mother and say I don't know how to make macaroni and cheese from scratch. But let's pretend all I ever knew to do was to make Kraft macaroni and cheese. That's the only pot I knew, the only water, the only noodles. How do I have a vision to make it from scratch if that's all I've ever seen? And so sometimes what we're challenged as educators to do is to have students look at their conditions today and actually help to give them the picture of tomorrow. I found the picture of my tomorrow in books and in educators who sowed into me and who gave me those visions, and in church community and in family who said, you don't yet see this, but I see this for you. And so I think it's my responsibility to help see that in somebody else and to help comb that out of them, because you can't be what you can't see.
That's true.
If all I've ever known is macaroni and cheese, I don't know what chicken is. I have no idea how to cook it. So we've got to give them the ability to see that next space.
That's good. And I love what you're saying. And I know our listeners love that too, because so often we do look at the negative and not the positive, even as adults, even in our relationships. We're looking at, well, they do this and I don't really like that, you know, and they're just getting on my nerves or whatever. And then you think, well, what is it that they do good? Well, I like this and I like that and I like, you know, well, I think I can deal with that, but it's that other stuff. I can't deal with that. And we need to also look at ourselves.
Yeah, it's a training of the mind. You know, humans are at our base. We are still very much
just humans,
humans, very much fight or flight. There's a part of our brain that is still, you know, very, very reptile in its creation. It is either run from and scurry from or fight. And we have to challenge our brains to think about that fight or that other side and the shade in the middle. Fight and flight aren't my only responses. I could talk it out. I could work it out. I could choose to see a different side. You know, that's the development. But it's hard. It's a protection of humans to look at what's negative because we're designed to fix things. You know, that's right. the creativity of the mind. Right. So you know, what's broken? If you're a fixer, you always ask what's broken.
Right.
You know, it's harder to daily meditate and think about that which is positive and that which is working. That's why gratitudes and affirmations and, you know, current brain science that's looking at the art of happiness and what it means to be happy and how that is sustained is really, really important. I forget the instructor, and I don't want to misspeak that she was at Stanford, but one of the Ivy Leagues, the number one course taken by students there was a course on happiness and how to be mindful, grateful, and happy, you know, and how to savor life. And I think in the hustle and bustle that is required in American life, that can be very easy to forget.
Right.
And that's where that orientation of our brain in that negative space can happen. But being mindful is really important.
It is. And I see a lot of adults and have heard from their perspective that they're not happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not 20 and 30 years old. They may be 50, 60, mm-hmm. 70 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't even think of a time when they were really, really happy or, you know, really mm-hmm. enjoyed their life at all. And mm-hmm. I think that's not good,
no,
even at that
not.
Age. You know, I mean,
it's not.
What are you basing your life on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can't get ahead from keep going 4 or 5 steps back, you know.
Absolutely.
And that can also be just a part of life, you know, and we have to learn how to accept the things that we can't change. But
absolutely,
talking to you, we can change some of those things as
absolutely.
Individuals.
Absolutely, we can. There's an exercise, and I hate that I'm going to forget what course that was and what school, but it is available through Coursera. So I'm sure if any of your listeners were to go to Coursera.com, which is a MOOC, a free massive online education portal, this instructor has a course out there. And I'm sure if they just went to Coursera and looked up happiness or the science of happiness, that they'd find the course very easily. And it's an 8-week course available and free to anybody. But one of the things that the instructor will coach you through in that course is actually just looking at something positive that's happened in your day and savoring it.
Right.
Thinking about it. You know, I've had occasion, a lot of occasions usually. I do it every day. I write down the things that I'm grateful for first out of my day. It's the first thing that I do. And sometimes it's really benign. I'll look at my son. This weekend we were at the Franklin Park Conservatory, and he sat. The butterflies are out, so if you get a chance, go up to the Franklin Park Conservatory. You will not regret it.
Okay.
But there are over 400 species of butterfly that they are cultivating there. And inside the conservatory, they're letting and releasing so many of them each week. And so we were able to look at a blue morphis. I'm hoping I'm saying that right for anybody who's out there and into butterflies. But we were in the observatory, and the butterflies were flitting around, and my son just took a beeline. And my first moment was panic because I didn't see where he went. It's a small space, but I didn't see where he went. And the next thing I saw him, he was in this little space, and he had found a butterfly on the ground. It was perched on a piece of mulch, and it was just flapping its wings.
Aww.
And it was a monarch butterfly. It was absolutely beautiful, that coloring, that orange and that white mixed in there. And my son took his 4 fingers, and he reached them out in the most gentle way. And my son's a rambunctious one, so when I say gentle with my son, if anybody knows him, they go, yeah.
It was gentle.
And it was very gentle. And he said, "You can get on me. Come here. I'm safe." You know,
oh,
and then he started imitating the way that she was flapping her wings. And this morning when I wrote my gratitude, I was thankful for his gentleness. And as I thought about that and I wrote it, I paused and I went through the entire scene in my mind. And I was intentional about closing my eyes
mm-hmm.
and actually recreating the space of him putting his hand out and actually you know, being next to the butterfly. And I savored it.
Yes.
You know, and later tonight I'll write about it so that I can savor it. And so that, I just to get chills right now just thinking about that. Now, he's going to be 26, 27 one day. And I will have imprinted that on my mind. In addition to the time that he probably takes my car without asking, the time that he disobeys me. Yeah. But if you're mindful to imprint the good things that are happening every day to you, when the bad things come, they're not any less bad. True. You just have a counter to them, and you have also additional frames of reference for your happiness.
True. So, That's good.
Works for me.
I like that. I like that very much. Being at Ohio State University in the technical college area, is there anything that you would like to change since you've been there? Yeah, I know it's been a short period of time.
It's been short.
You know, sometimes we can always see something that could be a little better, or maybe something that's not needed. If you could change something about it, what would it be?
What would I change it, Marion?
Maybe we need a little more of this or a little more of that, and maybe less of this and less of something else.
I think Marion Technical College is... We always need more students, so anybody out there who wants
thing.
To come,
yes,
come on. I mean, we can always take more students. We've got orientations coming up and some open houses. You come on out. But is there anything that I would change? That's a really good question. I definitely wish, and I wish this for all community colleges, that we had more resources to do some of the things we're being challenged to do. We had some colleagues come up from Tennessee, so this is not just Ohio. Mm-hmm. This is all community college because of our open access mission to serve any student who walks through the door. Students come through with challenges that are non-cognitive. I mean, we have students who face homelessness. We have students who have faced prior abuse. We have students who are facing food insecurities. And while we have, developmental committees working on this, we have a food pantry, we're trying in that space. That also affects the classroom, the faculty resources, the strain on the faculty. It affects so many things. And so in an ideal world, you'd always love more money and more resources to actually help with some of that. Our colleagues from Tennessee were sort of lamenting some of the same things. As, you know, I come into a classroom to teach statistics.
Right.
And so I am prepared to do that. But there are five or six students who have, you know, fallen asleep or who've checked out or who you know are going through X, Y, and Z, or who need additional support, or who need one-on-one tutoring, and I simply don't have the resources to do it.
Right.
You know, and so that can be, no one goes into education to get rich or to be famous. We all go into education because we care about developing the soul and that person.
Yes.
And so I think that can be frustrating. And I do wish there were unlimited resources for community colleges. So anybody running for office out there who's thinking about it, that's a great platform.
Yes, it is a great platform.
Yeah, but I would do that.
Yes, and much needed platform. Mm-hmm. Because even though we're talking about adults in college, and they have the same needs as the elementary students.
Sure.
Food and clothing and all those necessary things. So our school system has more or less turned into like a home or something. You can come here and learn here in the kitchen like we used to do at home, do your work here and do that. Okay, then we have another area where you could pick up some things that you may need, or here's some resource telephones and addresses that you can use.
Sure.
So the education system has really taken on a new
identity.
It has.
And yes. I think many institutions, the family has taken on new definitions throughout time. And so as, you know, work has taken on new definitions, I think, you know, everybody has a cell phone. Mine is in my pocket. And so the idea of constant work is a real phenomenon.
Yes, it is.
In today's middle class and working families, and in our white collar jobs, and even in our blue collar jobs, you know, the idea of overtime in some industries is a mandate. It's not even, I mean, it just is what's going to happen.
True.
And so we look at the context and our connectivity and things that are happening as it relates to work. And while it looks and appears like a 40-hour work week, when you look at those responses, the institution of work has changed. Well,
yes.
If the institution of work changes, so does the institution of family.
True.
The family dynamics are changing. So as the family changes, the school changes,
mm-hmm.
the church changes,
yes.
the community changes.
That's
We don't, you know, who's on a bowling league anymore?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way that we relate to each other and see each other is not on a Sunday 4 o'clock
mm-hmm.
bowling league as much anymore. It is on a social media platform. So the interaction and appearances of health change.
Yes.
Because we do know, as people are starting to look at, you know, social media and how people represent themselves online, there's one representation of the self online, and then there is the person that they usually are. And so things are also out of context, or even the way we relate and we are in social groups have changed, and the way that we have to portray ourselves has changed. So many things are changing. So for schools to have a new identity, it's just par for the course.
Yes, have to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
with
yeah, all of our institutional identities are changing, and,
yes.
and schools are as well.
Yes, and you're right. We're on them cell phones, Facebook. What's that other one?
Twitter.
And, you know, and yeah. pictures. It's like
mm-hmm.
this is face to face anymore. You
mm-hmm.
know, it's not actually meeting a person, and that's what I do love about radio,
mm-hmm.
because people can come and we can sit. I can see your face, you know,
absolutely,
and you can see mine and see our expressions. You know,
yes.
just it's a different feel than
mm-hmm.
Just on here. You know,
absolutely.
But this is new age.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is new age.
Cell phones, that's what they are. It is, and it's going to continue to change,
yes.
and it's a great thing.
Yes,
I think in some ways, I'm happy when I can call my mom in the middle of the day and make sure that she's okay,
mm-hmm.
or talk to her or hear her voice, and or know that I don't have to be disconnected from people. But you have to also be very intentional to be connected in a meaningful way to
that's
people.
That's true. That's true.
And that's harder.
And I really don't want to be on there for any other reason. But thank you, Jamila, for coming and
thank
being
you, Linda.
My guest today. I have truly enjoyed you, and I'm sure my listening audience has too. Thank you for tuning in to A Voice of a People here on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. And if you have any questions, remember to call 740-383-9944. And I'll be talking to you again tomorrow, so please stay tuned in tomorrow from 4:15 to 5 o'clock. And it's Linda Sims once again. And until next time, be blessed.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, LP, Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. For people like legendary comedian Shecky Green telling the funniest talk show story of all time about guest starring on Fantasy Island.
I was late.
Yes.
And as I always am for everything I do. And they were waiting for me. And he came up to me. He said, I meant to tell you something. Did you know you made us wait? You know, I said, well, I'm very sorry. And I didn't realize my call was for later and everything. Then I sat down and his wife came up to me. And she said to me, Shecky, I'm everybody's wife. And they had just gotten married, by the way. And she said, beautiful girl. And she said to me, would you like a cup of coffee? I said, I would love it. Thank you. And he says, listen, I went to tell you, don't talk to my wife. That's my wife. You understand? I don't want you to talk to my wife again. That's my wife. And I'm going to kill you. So I says, he's going to do what to me? You know.
Oh, man.
And then Ricardo says, I want to tell you, Shecky, with another accent, I want to tell you, don't pay any attention to him. Just pat him on the head 3 times.
And the producer told you that he had a gun.
Oh, he had a gun.
Yeah,
he carried a gun. Well, you know, people, if they went to rob him, they wanted to rob him. They didn't want to rob the money. They'd take him. They'd put him in the pocket.
WWDH Radio, 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road. Telephone number 740-225-4495. Webpage crtmechanicals.com. Thomas Lawn Service for all your lawn care and landscaping needs. Telephone number 740-751-1783. The WWGH Radio prize policy is as follows. You have 10 days from the day you win the prize to pick the prize up. You can only win once every 30 days. WWGH Radio staff reserves the right to question any and all prize winnings. The WWGH offices are open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for prize pickup. The WWGH offices are located at 559 East Center Street in the lower level of the Belltone Building. Thank you so much for playing fair.
This is Patty Worcester with Marion Midget Football, a staple of the Marion community for over 45 years, providing sportsmanship, friendship, and exciting competition. To our Marion youth, 740-382-4558.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time. As in, spaghetti sandwiches for dinner? They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt US Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by Affordable Event Games, LLC. Address 141 South Main Street. Telephone number 740-262-6050. Facebook Affordable Event Games.
This is Scott Spears looking down on the beautiful city of Marion from the WWGH News Chopper. If you would like to ever submit a news tip or an event to the WWGH News Department, email scott at WWGH1071.com and watch out for the chopper.
Vanover Square Apartments, address 465 Merchant Avenue, offer one- and two-bedroom apartments. Phone number 740-389-3462.
We here at WWGH Radio 107.1 FM are proud to present Magnificent Marion Moments. In March of 1905, a band of Brazilian gypsies camped on a farm a few miles outside of Marion, Ohio. On March 20th, a woman known in the camp as Queen Cleo died during childbirth. The body of both woman and child were buried in St. Mary's Cemetery. The original handmade wooden cross is still in place. The cross has no name or information on it. A few years later, a small stone was also placed on her grave.
This is George Casotas, and you are listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Find us on Facebook by searching WWGH Marion, Ohio 107.1 FM and clicking like for exclusive content.
Talking Points with Seth Schollinger on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by Moral Companies, LLC, leading the way with quality and service. Telephone number 1-800-554-3981, website moralcompanies.com, address Moral Location, 132 Postal Avenue, P.O. Box 26, Morrill, Ohio, 43337, Caledonia Location, 1592 Columbus-Sandusky Road North, Caledonia, Ohio, 43314, celebrating 55 years of service. And now a few words from Scott Spears, Charlie Evers, and the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams.
Have you heard my interviews with Phyllis Diller here on WWGH?
Have I heard it? I could recite it word for word.
Wow, Charlie, you must have a great memory.
Well, not really, but after 6,432 airings, it just becomes a part of your life. The sun comes up, the sun goes down, the moon comes out, and you hear Phyllis Diller's interview and cackle on WWGH.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Don't miss it.
Meadows Lawn Care and Landscaping is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-262-5638. Email meadowslawncare43302@gmail.com. Creating unique environments. Facebook, Meadows Lawn Care.
Hello. If you listen and enjoy A Voice of a People with Linda Sims, help A Voice of a People to be better. A $10 donation a week pledge will support and sponsor A Voice of a People. In so by doing, you will have the privilege of your name, business, organization, church, or your favorite charity mentioned or announced during our broadcast and entered into a drawing which will be held weekly. Prizes will vary. I also want to say this, anonymous donators are welcome and will be respected. Remember, if you want to make A Voice of a People a better program, a $10 a week donation / pledge will support and sponsor A Voice of a People.
A Voice of a People with Linda Sims can be heard twice weekly on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Monday and Tuesday from 4:10 p.m. to 5 p.m. The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue. Phone number 740-387-9050.
It's now time for WWGH News. News about people, places, and plans. Brought to you live from the WWGH newsroom. I'm Robin Leach.
This is Scott Spears in the WWGH News Center. The Republican-led Ohio Senate has again passed a measure to ban abortion once a fetal heartbeat is detected. The 19-13 vote Wednesday sends the so-called heartbeat bill to the Republican-controlled House. GOP Governor Mike DeWine has indicated he'd sign such a ban. It would be among the most restrictive abortion measures in the country. A fetal heartbeat can be detected as early as 6 weeks into the pregnancy, before many women know they're pregnant. Similar measures approved by Ohio lawmakers were twice vetoed by DeWine's predecessor, GOP Governor John Kasich, who said enacting the heartbeat bill would prompt a costly court battle and it would likely be found unconstitutional. The bill includes an exemption if the mother's life is at risk, but no exemption for cases involving rape or incest.
From the Marion, Ohio Weather Center, I'm Zach Fuller. Congratulations to 9-year-old